let's go for a walk, you know, let's go for a run, and whatever she could do. If she couldn't run, she walked. If she couldn't walk, she did something else. And she always put an adventure on her calendar so that when she was going through her chemo, she wasn't just a cancer patient. She was a mountaineer in training, or she was, you know, training for her next adventure race or ultra run.
Welcome to the Spartan Endurance Series on the Spartan Up Podcast. What makes you happier, spending your money on things or experiences? We dig deep into the archives to pull out two interviews from 2014. One is with Amit Kumar. At the time, he was at Cornell studying happiness. The second interview is with Robin Benincasa, an adventure racer, endurance athlete, and leadership instructor who's taking cancer survivors on ultra-endurance adventures. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com.
I'm Johnny Waite, and what I'm really excited about this interview because a lot of people see me as a happiness expert. They call me
and say, more of a doctor.
Sure, okay, sure, yeah, Dr. Johnny Waite. How can I be happy? This is a guy who's actually studying that formally at Cornell University,
and he's not even a doctor yet.
Yes, that's right, exactly.
Right, he has not reached your status, but you feel like you can learn from him.
You know what? I'm looking forward to learning from him.
So you're telling me you're an expert on happiness at Cornell University. And you're suggesting that if I give you all my material things, everything I have, my pants, my shoes, my socks, my phone, that I'll be happier? We are here Spartan Up the Podcast at Cornell University with Amit Kumar, who's a doctor?
Doctoral candidate.
doctoral candidate in social psychology.
Yep.
You're smart. And you study happiness?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. So we've done a lot of stuff on how people can kind of spend their money in ways to be happier. So it's kind of a problem that people have. Like, when I get more money, it seems like I'm not becoming a happier person. Why is that? One of the things that we look at is maybe people sort of make bad decisions
with their
in
money?
Terms of how they spend their money. So we've sort of drawn this distinction between experiential purchases and material purchases. To be clear, it's kind of money that you spend on doing versus having. So stuff, furniture, clothing, jewelry, gadgets versus experiences that you live through, whether they be concerts, meals out, vacations, trips, Spartan races, sort of series of events that you live through. And it turns out that people get more happiness from some of these experiential purchases than their material purchases.
Is it hands down that that's the case? Or like, is it almost 100% of the cases that's true?
It's true for most people, at least sort of in America. So in developed countries is really where we've studied it. But I think the reason it surprises most people is because material possessions kind of stay with you in some sense. Like when you buy something, you get to keep it.
A Gucci bag.
Yeah, exactly. For experiences, people will say like, this is only gonna last 3 hours or 3 days or a couple weeks or something. So maybe it's a better way to spend my money if I buy stuff instead of doing things. What they don't realize is they get used to that stuff or grows obsolete or whatever, but you kind of continue deriving benefits from the experiences that you've had.
The memories, the friends you meet.
The stories you tell, yeah, the social connections they foster, stuff like that. The identity that you develop, the person you become.
So Spartan Race has a future.
I think so, or I hope so, if we want people to be happier.
Yeah. And so we see a massive outpouring of people wanting to compete and come out and do these Spartan races. Certainly that must be part of it, right? They come out and they have such a great time. And relatively speaking, it's pretty inexpensive, right? It's an inexpensive experience.
Yeah, how much you spend on an experience doesn't necessarily determine how much enjoyment you get from it. It does matter more for sort of material stuff. People say you get what you pay for. That's true for material goods, but for experiences, doesn't really matter how much you spend. What matters is sort of what you get out of it. So there's lots of reasons why experiences make people happier. I think the Spartan Race kind of embodies some of those. So the sense of self that you develop, like who are you as a person? Your material purchases don't speak to that very much, but the experiences that you've had do. How much do you sort of connect to other people? How much kinship do you feel to other humans? What's the sense of community you're developing? Material purchases are sort of more isolating, whereas experiences kind of serve to connect people to each other. And you kind of mentioned memories. I think stories is sort of an important part of it too. So people talk more about their experiences than their material possessions. And that's important for lots of reasons. So when you talk about stuff, you can rethink it. You can position it in the broader context of your life, which I think is really important.
And not feel bad, right? Because if you bought something materially that another person doesn't have, it's hard to talk about that. And you're feeling bad because the other person that might not have that. But
yeah, there's right. necessarily these sort of comparisons that happen with material purchases. So I'm going to feel bad if somebody has something better than what I have, or if they paid less for the same thing that I have, those sorts of things. For experiential purchases, that's mine. So I wouldn't trade my experience for somebody else's. I want what I've done because that's kind of important to my sense of self.
Sure. And when I was younger, while I was at Cornell, I was running a swimming pool and construction company. And what I found was I had first world country employees. I also had third world country employees. And most of the first world country employees would say to me, I don't know what I want to do with my life, or I'm not happy. Or the third world people seemed always happy, as long as they were working. Have you studied that at all?
We haven't looked at that specifically, but I think there's lots of possible reasons for why that might be. So in a lot of sort of, especially in countries in Latin America and South America, I think societies, sort of communities, governments encourage experiential pursuits a lot more than our society does. So we have this sort of consumer culture here. But if we lived, you know, it's the hiking and the biking and stuff like that that makes people happier, the swimming. You can't do that sort of stuff unless there are well-maintained public parks and beaches and community swimming pools and stuff like that. When you live in a society that sort of fosters that sort of consumption, experiential consumption instead of material consumption, that might sort of tend to make people in that society happier, I think.
Our camera person, who's dying to be the talent in the show, and any chance she gets wants to be in here, said there's something called level one fun and level two fun. What were you saying? Like eating ice cream would be level one fun? But that has a short shelf life. Right? Is that what you're saying? Like, are you going to necessarily talk for long periods of time about the ice cream you had and it's unhealthy and all that stuff? Level two fun would be like doing a Spartan race, going ballooning, hot air ballooning, climbing a mountain. Probably miserable while you're doing it, but then all the endorphins get released at the finish line, all that whole experience gets discussed for years on end, you reflect on it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think looking at sort of these experiences that are negative in the moment is really interesting, and that's sort of something we're starting to pursue now. So we make all these comparisons to sort of material possessions, and it's hard to reframe negative material goods. So when your computer starts acting up or whatever, it's not like you can be like, oh, isn't it nice that all of a sudden my computer isn't doing what I wanted it to do? With experiences, because they're sort of, in a sense, they're fleeting because you don't keep doing them, but they live on in these stories that you tell. And when you're telling the stories, you might sort of be able to rethink of them in these important ways. Like, how did this become who I am? One thing that's really interesting that I really want to study, actually, we haven't looked at it yet, is whether people make these experiences that were negative in the moment kind of more negative when they're talking about them. So it's like, oh, that was like, so tough, that was so horrible.
I lost a toe.
Yeah, but you're still getting this sort of positive feeling from it because you're sharing these stories with other people. Or it could be that those things that were negative before, when you're talking about them, you turn them into these positive things, like, oh, it was this super amazing bonding moment. You kind of forget about how painful it was to hurt your toe or whatever. And
so we have 1 million participants this year globally that you can interview, and that I'm sure all of them blow up how terrible how terribly difficult the race was while the race was occurring. But at the same time, you can't wait to get back.
Yeah, so you can tell other people about it. Right. That's kind of part of why you're deriving more happiness from these sorts of experiences.
Another thing I would look at, I don't know if you've looked at this, but I would argue that difference between the experience and the material good, part of it is derived from the fact that you're sweating, breathing, having, acting like an animal, which is what we were meant to act like. Like, there's something inherently good about using this body that we've been blessed with, right?
I think that might sort of help encourage these feelings of connection, especially to the other people doing the race with you, that sort of thing. So you're kind of learning about your shared humanity, and that's gonna make you closer to other people. So we've done these studies where people say they feel more similar, more kinship with somebody that's had the same experience as them than somebody who has bought the same material possession as them. We also have these studies where people are actually more generous to other people after they've thought about experiences they've had than their material possessions. We don't really know why that is, why they're acting sort of more pro-socially, but one great possibility is, like, I understand how I'm like other humans rather than how I'm different from other humans. I think that would be really interesting to study.
Yeah. Well, going backwards for a second. So Vanderbilt's very wealthy family, must have been 70s or 80s, the son kills himself. Had everything you could ever want, right? All the material things. I saw some studies on billionaires. Many billionaires are not happy. Why is that? Yeah, is that exactly what we're talking about?
This is a problem that, like, keeps economists up at night. It's like money should make people a lot happier. It seems like it doesn't, or at least not as much as it should. And I think that's because people are sort of making these mistakes in terms of how to spend their money, where they're shifted too far towards sort of materialism. So there's this term from the 70s in psychology, the 60s actually, called the hedonic treadmill, where, like, once you get something, you get used to it, and then you want more and more and more. So this concept of adaptation is actually really important for this distinction. Adaptation is actually really helpful in terms of happiness when it comes to negative experiences. So people lose limbs, and, you know, that really sucks, but after a little while, you can still live sort of a meaningful, happy life. When it comes to positive experiences, though, adaptation's kind of this enemy. You get used to your stuff, and so you need more stuff to get the same amount of happiness, and then you get used to that new stuff that you bought. Experiences are kind of resistant to adaptation because of how they live on in our memories and our stories and in our social relationships. One interesting finding that I think you might like in this literature is people have studied regrets of experiences and possessions. For possessions, people tend to have regrets of action. So I did this thing and I wish that I hadn't done it. It's buyer's remorse, basically. With experiences, the regrets tend to be of inaction. So there's something that you could have done this thing, but you wish you had, but you hadn't. Those regrets are really problematic when it comes to experiences. So when you have the opportunity to do something, you really should take advantage of it. You should go ahead and engage in that experience.
What about the medal? The medal they get at the end of this race, the Spartan race, is like, it might as well be a gold medal. These customers of ours go crazy over the medal. I mean, to the point where if they don't get the right one, the nicest one, like they're giving out in Europe right now, Spartan race is giving out in Europe, they're mad. Is it all about the medal?
I hope not, though. The psychologist in me says the answer should be it depends on how people are thinking about the medal. So what you just described, people aren't going to be happy if they're thinking about the medal in terms of, like, how nice this one is compared to that one. But if they're construing the medal as sort of a symbol of this experience they had, then they're going to be thinking about the experience rather than that sort of item, and then they're going to probably get some happiness from the medal itself. I think the medal might help as kind of this marker of this thing that you did.
That they did it, and they get to remember it, and they get to tell stories. It's proof. It's the fish they caught, right?
Yeah. So that part, I think, matters. The how nice it looks, those sorts of things, that shouldn't matter that much in terms of happiness.
So basically, every time we get a customer service inquiry that says they want the medal like they give out in Europe, I could just play this video and say, according to the professor, he says, don't worry about the medal.
I could authorize that. You can feel free to use my good name to do that, I think.
After the break, we're going to dig in and hear an example of how using experiences can change people's lives for the better with endurance athlete Robin Benincasa. We'll be right back to this interview, but first a message from today's sponsor, Durolane. You know that knee pain can really slow you down. Sometimes that knee pain is due to osteoarthritis, a disease that affects some 14 million Americans. Learn about osteoarthritis knee pain and how to alleviate it at oaknepainrelief.com. You'll find information there about non-surgical, non-opioid treatments for osteoarthritis knee pain that may help delay the need for knee surgery. One treatment you'll find there is Durolane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months of relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. It's indicated for the treatment of mild to moderate osteoarthritis knee pain when conservative treatments have not worked. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. Full prescribing information is at Durolane.com. Spartans say no to limits. You can learn more at oaknepainrelief.com. That's oaknepainrelief.com. All right, back to the interview. In 2014, Joe and I chased down Robin Benincasa, an athlete he had raced with in the past. And she explained to him the power that the experiences endurance athletes go through have to change your identity, how you think about yourself, and how she uses that change to help cancer survivors.
So this interview is with Robin Benincasa. Joe, you met with her. And
I've raced with her.
Yeah, impressive lady. Yeah. Incredible. So what was it? Four hip replacements. We're going to hear about how you keep going and setting world records with four hip replacements.
Yeah, she eats barbed wire for breakfast. She is the toughest woman alive.
Part of the reason the longevity is, you know, realizing what your strengths are and continuing to go further and further down that track. And that comes from knowing yourself, too.
So in other words, kayaking felt really good for a while. And you pushed it to the limit until you've got...
Well, yeah. I just love the kayaking sections in adventure races. Right. I wasn't as good at the mountain biking stuff, but I was great when it came to the kayaking stuff. So after I started having my hips replaced, I thought, let's stick with my strengths. You know, let's become a paddler. And so my first race was a 460-mile paddle from Whitehorse to Dawson City, wow. Which is something you would totally do.
Wow.
It's like, why not do the longest, silliest thing first? So, but I was really so excited because I was like third overall.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, I found another sport where, as a girl, it's a pretty cool thing to be competitive overall. And that's where I decided, you know, that's where my strength is.
I was racing against you once, and I was new to the sport. You had already had a few years on me. And we hit a wall that we were going to Jumar up.
Is that the Jumar?
Yes, what Jumar is.
So there are ropes hanging, and you've got these apparatuses that go up, but then lock, and you climb up the rope.
We hit a wall that we were going to Jumar up.
Okay.
And you went pretty quick up. I don't know, it was like 1,000 feet, or it was some massive wall we climbed. I don't even remember the race we were at. And I thought, well, if she made it up there pretty quick, it's probably going to take me half the time. I was stuck out there for about 3 hours climbing this thing.
I had my ascension rigged, man. I was a great ascender. And XO is an excellent repeller, too, because of gravity and all. Yeah. But, yeah, it's really a neat thing when you find your strength.
Yeah.
And
judo, where'd that come from?
Judo came from... okay, so I was doing Ironmans for a bunch of years. And after an Ironman in Hawaii... I was in the hospital because there were 7 of us that got some kind of E. coli infection in the water in the swim. And we were all in the hospital together with like 104, 105 fever. So yada, yada, yada. I was in the hospital thinking, you know what? I want to do a sport where my weight, because I'm not frail, is is actually a strength, like where there's weight divisions or something. And so I started thinking, well, I got to be some kind of fighter or some kind of, and the idea for judo just came to me. And so I started going down that road of becoming a judo player and loved it.
But you went in a really short period of time to like Olympic level?
Almost.
Okay.
I won the nationals.
Nice.
I was third, second, and then first 3 consecutive years in my weight division.
And how long, people put in a lifetime of training for judo. You put in?
I kind of started at 27.
And finished up at 30?
Finished at like 32, I guess. Yeah, you know, I just had a wild hair. And when you find, like, early on that something is working for you, that you're kind of good at it, you just got to go. Yeah.
Business ever intrigue you, being in business?
Yeah, actually. I have 2 businesses now. One's a profit and one's a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And, again, they both came from, well, the speaking thing came totally by accident. And that was because none of the other guys on the racing team would do it.
So, we'd do the speeches.
Right. Somebody asked us one day, like, you guys have to present because this totally matches, you know, in the corporate world, the teamwork that we need, this extreme level of teamwork that we need to really succeed. And so this woman came to our team when we were world champions and said, oh, I would love for one of you guys to speak to my client. And it was one of these. You know, I drew the shortest straw.
Sure, and you did it.
And so then I started going down that road. And that's been about 10, 12 years now that I've been doing the speaking thing. And then after my hip replacement, I started Project Athena, which is the nonprofit.
Project Athena. And so that's a nonprofit. Explain that.
So after I started having my first hip replacement, I thought about Louise Cooper, who you know.
I remember Louise, yeah.
And Louise is now a 2-time breast cancer survivor. And so she really inspired me because after her first bout with breast cancer, it was so funny because I'd go to her house and she'd be, you know, all big from all the drugs she was on and bald, and she'd be like, you'd barely get in the door, and she's like, let's go for a walk, you know, let's go for a run, and whatever she could do. If she couldn't run, she walked. If she couldn't walk, she did something else. And she always put an adventure on her calendar so that when she was going through her chemo, she wasn't just a cancer patient. She was a mountaineer in training, or she was, you know, training for her next adventure race or ultra run. And kind of inspired by that, that's when I decided to put that first big paddling race on my calendar. I was in the hospital and decided to put that big paddling race on my calendar. And then the thought was, why don't we do this for other women?
And that's, you know, Project Athena.
Yeah.
You're taking people and you're bringing them to like the Grand Canyon, women specifically.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things going on. We take survivors and fundraisers on each of our trips. And we have 5 or 6 trips a year. And in the beginning, we thought maybe our survivors would have their own adventurous dream. And some of them do. Like, I want to go to a surf camp in Costa Rica. I want to climb Kilimanjaro. They have a very specific
thing. But they don't have a support group to do it.
Right. And we help them do it. And then we started creating our own adventures because some survivors were kind of saying, well, I don't really have my own dream, but I want to just come with you guys.
Got it.
So now we have these ongoing adventures. One of them is a Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim, where we hike all the way across the Grand Canyon, all the way back in 2 days.
Nice.
And then we just got back last week from our annual Keys to Recovery adventure, where we kayak and ride from Key Largo to Key West, 120 miles.
Oh, that's great.
And next year we're having a harbor to harbor in beautiful, sunny San Diego, where we're hiking.
Yeah, how often does it rain here?
Is this, like, never. You brought this with
brought
you,
the
my
rain.
Friend. That's a 50-mile hike from Oceanside Harbor to San Diego Harbor over 2 days.
So how many women will go out on these adventures?
We'll take 30 to 40. On each of our adventures. And it's usually 6 or 7 survivors and 20 to 25 fundraisers on all of them.
Wow.
And they're really inspirational because there are things that, well, the people that are listening to this are probably badass, crazy athletes, and it's fabulous. But normal people, you know, it's a big deal to hike across the Grand Canyon and back in 2 days. And so we do these endurance adventures so people can just see how amazing they are.
That's awesome.
Which is the whole point of it, yeah.
And it's growing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Last year we were one of the 2014 CNN heroes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was really,
changing
really
changing lives,
cool.
It feels great, right? I'm always wondering, you've got endurance junkies, right? Like the people you've run into or you do. I would assume that those people have what it takes to build businesses and get stuff done. But typically I find it's not correlated. Somebody that just climbs Everest is not necessarily going to build a business. And at the core of this Spartan Up podcast, I've been trying to figure out, why is that? Like, what, you know, you get the guy who's got a AAA type personality, becomes a CEO of Time Warner, retires, drops dead because he's so unhealthy.
Yeah.
And then you got this really healthy guy or girl that's climbing Everest and they can never run a business. So I don't know what's going on there.
It's a good question.
Because you're doing both.
Yeah, I mean, some of it honestly happened by accident. But I also think that you know, there's nature and there's nurture. So sometimes you're surrounded by people that kind of take your hand and say, I think you would be amazing at this. But I think all of us, you know, just have this thing that drives you. And I think for a lot of people, it drives you in both directions. Like, I want to succeed physically and spiritually. I want to succeed in my business. I want to give to others. Like, there's all these different branches of maximizing your potential. I mean, and it's not even money. It's
being productive.
It's what am I capable of?
Yeah.
That's what you really want to find out. And if you're a smart person, there's so many different avenues that you can find out what you're capable of. And I think over a lifetime, you know, you go from that uber physical self and maximizing that, and then you kind of roll into your uber business self, your uber giving self. As you get older and older, things like the things you want to tackle just
kind like a of new
change.
New chapter in your life.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's definitely happening for me, so yeah. I agree with that.
Thanks for listening to this classic episode of the Spartan Endurance Podcast. We've pulled together some of the highlights, some of the best lessons from some of our best interviews, all in one place at spartan.com/toughbible. If you want to see these complete interviews and many others, take a look there. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Endurance Series on Spartan Up Podcast. Spartan Up is your partner in resilience for mind, body, and spirit. We're here 3 days every week. Tuesdays, you can find Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan, interviewing biohackers, business leaders, authors, and athletes. Thursdays and Saturdays, catch episodes from our DECA, Endurance, Trail, Combat, and La Ruta series. Do you know someone who needs a little nudge? Maybe they could use some motivation, tactics, to be stronger, healthier, happier, more successful. Tell them about our show. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment. We want to know who's watching and who's listening. Thanks. See you next time. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months' relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com.